topic of seclusion can be invested with both a bodily and a mental dimension. In addition to bodily withdrawal to a forest, the root of a tree, or an empty hut, seclusion of the mind from the hindrances can similarly serve as a foundation for the cultivation of mindfulness of breathing in 16 steps. In order to establish the mental dimension of seclusion fully, through letting go of our worries and concerns, we can check in on the mind to see if any of the hindrances are present. If this should be the case, we set up a clear intention in relation to the hindrance, similar to the king in the passage mentioned above. It would be better if you stayed outside. If we find that the hindrance nevertheless barges in and tries to disturb the condition of the mind, gently but firmly and with compassion, we send it back outside, employing whatever antidote we are accustomed to and have found helpful on past occasions. Karuna is really helpful. Non-contention. I mean, this, it's impersonal. It's anything that has arisen, the causes are already present. It's not your fault, so have compassion. The posture. Besides specifying locations suitable for the practice of mindfulness with breathing, the introductory passage also describes the proper posture. Mindfulness of breathing was considered a form of sitting meditation. This does not mean that there is something wrong with becoming aware of the breath in another posture or in an everyday situation. And really, you're meant to maintain mindfulness in all postures. There's no reason you couldn't practice mindfulness with breathing lying down. Sometimes that's the skillful thing to do. The reference in the introductory passage to folding the legs crosswise reflects the typical way of sitting on the floor in ancient Indian context. From a practical perspective, the main issue is to establish a firm foundation for meditation with only a minimal need to change the posture. Instead of sitting on the ground, the same can also be achieved with the help of a bench or chair. Regarding sitting on the ground, early texts do not refer to sitting cushions, but only to sitting mats. These appear to have been simply a piece of cloth or padding made of grass, leaves, or straw spread on the ground to provide protection and insulation. Sitting without a cushion, to some extent, enhances the stability of the sitting posture as the area of bodily contact with the ground increases. Nevertheless, it is important to avoid associating spiritual progress with a particular sitting posture. What counts in the end is the condition of the mind. Ultimately, it's the mind that must sit in the full lotus. Motivation. Going beyond what is implicit in the actual instruction, the need to establish a firm foundation for sitting meditation through an appropriate posture can also be related to the mental domain. This can take the form of establishing a firm foundation for our meditation practice through appropriate motivation. Or you could look at it as wise aspiration, sammasankappa, informed by wise view, samadhi. It can be very helpful to formulate such a motivation in the mind before beginning actual practice. Analio 2018D 140F. Perhaps right after having sat down. This could be an aspiration like, may I progress on the path to liberation for my own benefit and for the benefit of others. Setting up such a motivation provides a sense of overall direction as an orientation point. At the same time, it also arouses joyful inspiration, whose importance for continuity of practice can hardly be overestimated. As regards the actual formulation employed for such an aspiration, it is particularly commendable to bring in an altruistic dimension. This fortifies us for times of difficulty as we are practicing for the sake of benefiting others and not just ourselves. It can also help to situate our meditation practice within the framework of the Noble Eightfold Path. The cultivation of the four satipatthanas, here in the form of proceeding through the four tetrads of mindfulness with breathing, is the seventh factor of this path. The second factor of the path is wise intention, which has three dimensions. One of these is the intention for non-harm, which is an expression of compassion. Analio 2017C. just as wise intentions, based on wise view, set the proper direction for a cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, so the compassionate intention to benefit others and compassion for ourselves, of course, too, can set the proper direction for the flourishing of our practice of mindfulness with breathing. Yet another benefit of setting up our intention relates to the hindrances. Should a hindrance be present when we start with our practice, the formulating of our aspiration at this juncture can have the same function as the first in a set of five methods for overcoming unwholesome thoughts mentioned in the Vitakasanthana Sutta, MN 20, Analio 2013b149. This function is to replace an unwholesome thought with a wholesome thought, similar to a carpenter who replaces a gross peg with a finer one. In this way, any gross unwholesome thought that might have been popping up in our mind can be replaced by finer wholesome thought of formulating our motivation. If there are no hindrances manifesting right now, the joyful inspiration that has arisen from articulating our intention will make it considerably less probable that a hindrance will arise subsequently. The need to arouse joy right at the outset of the practice is also recognized in the Visuddhimagga, which recommends recollecting the qualities of the three jewels, that is, the Buddha, his teaching, and the community of those on the path, or having attained one of the levels of awakening. Bodily posture. Based on having established a firm foundation for sitting meditation in the bodily and mental domain, the next aspect described in the passage above is keeping the body erect. The sitting posture needs to be such that the spine is kept straight, or its natural. The spine needs to be in its natural posture. Here, some degree of continuity of attention to the posture is required to avoid any slumping of the body. The Visuddhimagga comments that the spine should be kept straight with vertebrae resting end to end to avoid the type of feeling tones that arise when the body is twisted in any way. It's the natural curvature of the spine, which in turn would obstruct gaining unification of mind. Keeping the body erect could be achieved by slowly passing our attention through the spine from bottom to top, relaxing. Such relaxing enables a natural alignment of the spine by just letting gravity pull downwards. The overall sense is as if the body were suspended from above, at the top of the head, and the rest of it relaxes downward. The resulting erectness of the body is not something to be held in a fixed manner. Instead, the body remains flexible, comparable to a slender tree in the wind. Such flexibility allows for minor adjustments to occur whenever we notice that the body is not fully in balance. Needless to say, this does not mean we keep shifting around all the time, but just that we avoid holding the posture rigidly and with tension, be it when sitting on ground, cushion, bench, or chair. Just having compassion for yourself, and it includes other postures like standing or walking or lying down as well. In order to be able to keep the body erect, we of course need to be aware of it. Thus, the present part of the instruction requires establishing awareness of the body as a whole in the sitting posture, and to some degree also monitoring it throughout the meditation session, at least until such a deep level of unification is achieved that the posture of the body naturally remains in its optimal position. During stages preceding such deep unification, cultivating whole body awareness ensures that the body is kept erect and provides a grounding for the practice of mindfulness with breathing. Mental posture. Going beyond what the actual instructions say, the need for posture of the body to be realigned whenever it is lost can be complemented by the need for the posture of the mind to be realigned whenever it is lost. And if you look at the instructions in the sutta itself, you can see that reflected. It's a sensitive to bodily formations, I breathe in and out. Relaxing bodily formations, I breathe in and out. And then sensitive to mental formations, I breathe in and out. Relaxing mental formations, I breathe in and out. Here the task is to stay in the present moment and avoid the mind succumbing to distractions. These two alignments could be combined in the sense that after having aligned the spine by relaxing, We can set up the firm intention to align the mind to the present moment by relaxing any tendency to distraction, or relaxing around distraction, even because aversion feeds aversion. You don't get rid of aversion by being aversive to it. Setting up such an intention at the outset can serve as a way of telling the mind to keep a lookout for whenever the present moment is about to get lost. Just as we realign the body whenever its straightness has been lost, so we keep realigning the mind whenever it has succumbed to distraction and become overpowered by one of the hindrances. Due to the direction set by our firm intention and the previous groundwork, a mere reminder of our overall aim can often suffice to ensure that any hindrance goes quickly into abeyance. Mindfulness established. The passage translated at the outside of this chapter continues after the description of the appropriate posture with the expression, having established mindfulness to the fore. The Vibhanga, an early Abhidhamma text of the Theravada tradition, relates the expression to the fore, paramukha, to the nose tip or upper lip, but mindfulness to the fore is metaphorical. It's a figure of speech. We're establishing mindfulness in front of us. Nowhere does the Buddha say that we have to follow the breathing at one specific point. The place where you should follow the breathing is the place where it's most vivid to you. Due to the very nature of human physiology, there is going to be movement in the chest and abdomen. A more general sense emerges in one of the explanations of this expression provided in the Visuddhimagga 271, according to which mindfulness should be set up in such a way that it faces abhimukha, the meditation object, kamatana. References to mindfulness that is established to the fore occur in other Pali discourses to introduce meditation practices that do not involve the breath. Nalio 2003b 128f. In such contexts, an understanding of the phrase as referring to nose tip or upper lip makes sense. Less sense. In the case of one such occurrence where mindfulness established to the fore leads to overcoming the five hindrances, MN 107, the Chinese parallel speaks instead of mindfulness that is undivided, MA 144, Analio 2020b. That was just the way that the commentaries tried to justify their position, but setting mindfulness to the fore just means to be mindful. In view of these indications, it seems fair to leave it open to individual practitioners at which particular physical location they observe the breath. This concords with a general attitude of flexibility in the early discourses, and wisdom and skillful means. One discourse reports the Buddha approving of a monastic's own mode of practice of mindfulness of breathing. The Buddha gives lots of different instructions on how to practice. They're better seen as comprehensive. SN 46.6. 54.6. Only after such approval did the Buddha explain how mindfulness of breathing can be undertaken and in an even better way, namely by proceeding through the 16 steps. This shows that in ancient times, mindfulness of breathing was taught in a flexible manner without the expectation that everyone had to practice in the exact same way. Well, you can see how that's unskillful. You can see how that's unwise and not compassionate and not reflected in the Buddhist discourses. Although the nostril area is a natural choice, is it though? I can't feel the breathing at the nostrils. The natural choice is the physiological movement of the chest and abdomen due to the very nature of breathing itself. The same can also be achieved by attending to the back of the throat, to the chest or the abdomen area, or else even without relying on a particular circumscribed physical location. The primary way that I practice these days is to just feel the breathing where I feel it, which just by the very nature of reality itself happens to be the movement of the chest and abdomen due to the physical process of breathing. For those who prefer to work with a single spot, it can still be helpful to broaden awareness beyond that spot to the whole of the breath. The suggestion is not to follow the breath in and out, but to broaden our perspective and arrive at a more complete apperception of the phenomena under contemplation. This phenomena is the breath as a whole, and not only the sensation caused by the breath at a particular spot of the body. But how do you know the breath? How do you feel the breath? You feel it. That's, I mean, otherwise you're talking about a mental exercise, or you're talking about something that's not really there. How do you know you're breathing? Because you can feel it. How do you follow the breathing? By following the feeling of it, by the actual physical sensations and actual physical action of breathing. Encouraging a broader form of awareness in this way is helpful for the progression through the 16 steps.